Blistering insight, well-researched fact, insightful comment. I'm afraid you've come to the wrong place. But welcome, because this is none other than the world-famous Leicester City Pubcast. Hello everyone, welcome to the Leicester City Pubcast, home of the 2016 Premier League champions and 2021 FA Cup winners. Welcome to the Foss Arms. We've got a table for three here, Norm, but Killer's not with us.
Oh no.
Killer's ill tonight. Late pullout. So Killer, how are you feeling better?
And typical, it's his round as well.
It is his round. And he's going to be really annoyed when we come on to the predictor later as well. So there you go, Killer. We might have some good news for you later on. How are you, Norm? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you, Tim. How are you?
Very good. All the better for a five-star performance from City against Stoke. And before that, a three-star one, I suppose, against Swansea.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm sure we're both delighted with the results. Swansea was, you know, not quite as sensational as Stoke, but, you know, nevertheless, it felt like a reasonably routine kind of victory. But you know, I think obviously an early goal really helps, and had Daka managed to score the second when like KDH crossed it in for him, I'm pretty sure it would have been a slightly easier game for us. But when he failed to score that, despite, you know, creating a couple more chances, it just gave Swansea a little bit of a boost, and they kind of hung in there fairly gamely, and managed to get to half time, you know, with it just being at the one goal, and you know, getting quite a way into the second half also before we scored our second. And it was definitely slightly, you know, getting slightly frustrating, and obviously the crowd were feeling it. I think getting a little bit nervous really, because yet again we, you know, in a game where we've pretty well dominated, we've just let things slip with a couple of times, maybe a little bit casual with the passing that just gave them some hope. Fortunately, they didn't capitalise, obviously, and just felt that once Mavadidi scored the penalty, I mean, I have to say, I think Daka really ought to have managed to put the ball in the net prior to going down for, which was I thought quite a harsh penalty, if I'm honest, but take it. Great penalty from Mavadidi. And then a nice finish from Matt Gunn, obviously, for the third, 2 or 3 minutes later. Once we were in, you know, at that point, we were totally in control. Once we got the second goal, it felt like everyone could relax. The crowd relaxed, you know, the team relaxed. And we never looked in danger. Just to send, you know, a slight shame that we managed to let Swansea score a goal in the last minute. I mean, sure, Hermansen would be, you know, pretty annoyed that he's not managed to keep a clean sheet. But, you know, the juggernaut rolls on, and you know, it was a positive performance. Interesting that he selected Doyle instead of JJ. And obviously did that again for Stoke. So I'm just wondering whether...
Did you think he's just managing JJ's minutes a bit, isn't he?
Well, possibly. Or I think probably more so that in his mind, Doyle is the... I wonder whether Doyle's his favoured player. I mean, he started the season with Doyle. It was only injury to Doyle that saw him leave, or saw him like drop out the side. So I'm just... You know, I just made a note to myself here to wondering whether or not he is kind of his go-to player there.
I'd be shocked. I mean, he has shocked us with the odd, well, primarily the Cassidy selection over the weeks, hasn't he? But I'd be shocked if he did have Doyle back in for Joe. I wondered if JJ's been nursing an injury. I mean, JJ's not done anything wrong, but he is, you know, his injury track record isn't great, is it?
No, I've not seen him get injured. I mean, we don't know. And obviously, of course, he came on against against Stoke. So I mean you're quite possibly right. I mean, the other player in that guise also is Daka. I mean, obviously Daka's come back from the African Cup of Nations, and straight into the starting lineup. So for a player that at the beginning of the season was not getting a sniff, all of a sudden, you know, for him to drop Cannon and not play Vardy, who have both done, you know, obviously Cannon's done pretty well since he's come in. I kind of felt that was a little bit of a statement saying Daka's almost like he feels like our number one striker in Enzo's eyes now.
I thought it was a massive statement. I was completely shocked. And, we'll come on to talk about, because you've already mentioned it, but there was some growlings and unhappiness, certainly at half time in the game, despite us leading, which we'll come on and talk about in a bit once we've covered these games. But I mean, the Daka selection itself would have prompted a bit of head scratching, surely.
No, absolutely, and I think people's heads were scratching even more when he missed his opportunity. You know, it was like, oh no. I mean, I think actually when you've been away and you've only just really come back, to be put in straight into a game is probably quite a big thing. It, you know, maybe coming on as a sub might have been a better option for him, but you know, all in all, I felt, apart from the missed chances, I know he won the penalty, but like I said, I think he should have, you know, with his pace, and he has got ability. I kind of was a little disappointed that hadn't been buried, but look, I don't want to be too picky. We won a pen, great. I thought he did okay, and I think he did, you know, in the Stoke game, obviously I thought he did well again, and he's a striker, and if you look at how many goals he's scored in the number of games he's played, he's doing really well. So I suppose it makes sense, really, that he's been selected. So, you know, well done, Patsa. And he certainly looked better against Stoke, I thought, than he did versus Swansea. And I just think that's because he's been reintegrated into the team and had a bit more back in our training, a bit more getting used to our, you know, Enzo's way.
So, question for you then, Nom, because he did do better in the Stoke game, but you know, when he came back for the Swansea game, it was a bit of a typical Daka performance, really. The Swansea game, wasn't it? He's not quite convincing. Who's your number one striker right at the moment?
I don't. It's hard to say. I think you could make an argument for all of them. You know. Obviously, we love Vardy, but he's not quite the player he was. But I think a lot of that is because, you know, we're not quite playing to his strengths. And I think there's, you know, the fourth goal against Stoke, I think, is exactly how you play to Vardy's strengths. You know, it was a fairly, you know, a quick ball out of defence to Winks, a lovely ball through to JJ on the wing, and a great cross in. And Vardy is just, you know, still too quick for their defenders and bags it. So I think that it's hard for me not to want Vardy to be our number one. I think Daka is still, I would still have Daka over Cannon. I know Daka.
But just to be clear, your answer is Vardy, right?
Oh no, well, I don't know.
Come on, this is the Leicester City podcast. There's no sitting on fences.
Okay. I still think Vardy is our best striker. And I think he has moments in every season where he has patches, doesn't he? Where he has a bit of an off time, then he goes on a bit of a streak. I think that in the Championship, certainly, I know he's 37, he should still be our starting striker. But I think it is close between them all, and I don't feel, you know, I'm not at the point where if Vardy isn't starting that I'm horrified by it.
Yeah,
you know, I think Daka, you know, I think he has come back and done well, particularly given how little opportunity he had at the beginning of the season. So, okay, waffled on. Vardy is my answer, but it's really, really close.
For what it's worth, I agree entirely with everything you've said. I think the thing that's curious is the Daka frozen out and now Daka clearly is the number one striker. I mean, you know, he's had a decent playing journey home and to go pretty much straight into that team surprise me. We've just talked about managing Justin with his sort of injury fragility. Maybe Enzo thinks Vardy's the best striker, but he knows he's got to manage his minutes given his age. And I think that would be fair enough. But Vardy still for me. I mean, he scored as many goals as Daka did in the Stoke game off however long he had on the pitch, not very long. So he still looks sharp to me. There'll be a debate to be had in the summer, won't there? The Stoke game generally was brilliant. It's kind of, you know, this season's been so fantastic, really. But we've laboured at times, and to go and put away a team like that. Never forget. Oh, I'm sure you haven't forgotten them. That's the team that sent us down to League One, folks. On that that fateful day, I've never ever forgotten that. So it's always good to give Stoke a little reminder just how the pecking order is in the Midlands. So I did enjoy that for that reason.
Look, 100%. That day was a horrible, horrible day in our history. I mean, fortunately, we were only in that division for a season. But yeah, it wasn't nice. And the way they celebrated, you know, like sending us on our way was, it's a bitter pill to swallow. So yeah, to go to Stoke and win 5-0, frankly, to go to any, you know, to play away anywhere and win 5-0 is pretty, you know, pretty decent, isn't it? So, and I think like Enzo said at the end of the game, to be honest, it was, it all went very, very well. And it's almost, he felt it was because Stoke played exactly how he thought they would play. So if he's predicted that, and you know, fair play to him.
Right, I suppose,
you
know, he's seen Schumacher team quite recently, hasn't he, with Plymouth? So he's
where we also turned them over. Can we make him play Schumacher every week?
career in free fall. Three months ago, he was the go-to manager in the Championship. One thing that I wanted to, a couple of things actually specifically to pick out the Stoke game. We're in real danger of glossing over Mats Hermansson and the season he's having. That double save was out of this world. I mean, this guy, because I think with a goalkeeper, it's different with a winger. Like, you know, our wingers are fantastic. All right, let's see how they get on next year. But hopefully against Kyle Walker, against Udogie, you know, against Robertson, against fullbacks like that. That's going to be an entirely different kettle of fish. I think for a goalkeeper, when they're making absolutely top draw saves, they're just making top draw saves. It doesn't matter that, you know, that it came from a Championship player or a League One player or a Premier League player. What they're going to get in the Premier League is many more top draw chances aimed at them. So I suppose that's the difference. But blimey, that save he made, the double, I mean, the second part of it, the first part of it was out of this world. The second part was even better. I thought, absolutely brilliant.
No, I think we have picked up a little diamond there. I'd still like to, you know, I'd still like to see him perhaps be a little bit more positive on crosses, which seems to be our Achilles heel with any goalkeeper we have. But no, I think he's a class above. I mean, completely different to obviously Everson and Ward. I mean, Schmeichel is long gone, but it was, you know, I'm not saying he's better than Schmeichel, but I think Hermansson is a Premier League class, or certainly will be, goalkeeper. And I think, like you say, that, you know, as a goalkeeper, you can only save what's in front of you. And I think the other real positive with him is
you can't technically save what's behind you if you're a goalie.
Well, not unless you're Gordon Banks from Palais header, where he literally has done. I mean, and
Kevin Poole made a save like Banks' one once, by the way. No one, he never got the coverage for some reason.
But really, I think what I'm trying to allude to is that, you know, he does make some really great saves. And the other thing is as a goalkeeper, it's keeping your concentration, isn't it? Because he does spend, and particularly in the Stoke game, an awful amount of time, you know, basically being a defender that can use his hands.
Yeah.
You know, he's there, and he's been selected and brought in because of his ability with his feet and his passing. And it's great that he's one of those goalkeepers that can also absolutely do his proper role, which is he's the goalkeeper. And to be able to make those kind of saves when you've done, you know, frankly, had an afternoon off, is great, isn't it? And because you need to retain that conversation, you could just be a bit rusty. And a lot of the games we dominate so much, you know, he does need to keep his eye on the ball, obviously, all these cliches. And
yeah, it's a very good point. It's a very good point, because he's performing in the way he is, as you say, off very limited action time, if you want to call it that, which is makes it all the more impressive. I'm really confident that's one position, hoping we go up, that's just not going to be a problem for us. I really am. The only thing I'm not sure, I don't know the answer to this. Do you know how tall he is? He's not the tallest, is he?
No, but he doesn't look small.
No,
I mean, you mentioned Kevin Poole, who's like in the old days probably wouldn't have got in the police force because he wasn't tall enough. You know, so I think he's a decent size. And I think the other thing is, you know, you think of like place like a goalies like the one that comes to mind is Fraser Forster, who seems to be, you know, very very tall indeed. It's all well and good being exceptionally tall, but that does mean you probably can't get down low quite as quickly, or, you know, be quite as agile. So I think I get the feeling he's almost like the perfect size, you know, pretty tall, but not enormous, you know, big enough to stick your arms in the air higher than a striker can get his head on the ball, which is frankly all you need. And most people should be able to do that.
Let me give you the answer. Actually, I've just looked it up.
Can I guess? 6'4".
I don't know, because it's in modern stuff that you and I don't understand. 1.87 metres. But to give you some context, Daniel Everson's actually only 1.93. And tallest tree, Yannick Vestergaard, is 1.99. So, yeah, well, he's not small, actually.
I'm 6'2.5 and I'm 1.88. So he's 6'2".
Yeah. Yeah, so actually not an issue.
I mean, he's obviously got my leap. So yes.
there, the similarities end. The other thing was, and actually, I felt very very vindicated with this team selection, and you must have felt doubly so, because on this podcast we have for weeks and weeks been saying, Enzo, you got your answer to the Cassidy problem, even when Cassidy was still at the club. And it's called Casey McAteer, or if it's not McAteer, it's Albrighton. If it's not Albrighton, it's Pratt. And we've said, look, try it, but you're never going to try it. Well, he tried it, and McAteer scored.
He did, and, you know, got a silly booking just to throw in the negative. But he's, I thought he did well. I think he's that kind of player. And I think with, you know, a three of Fatawu, McAteer, and Mavadidi, I mean, it's pretty good. And I also thought it, you know, it gave Dewsbury Hall a bit more opportunity to be the almost like the more of the number eight rather than the number 10. So I think he's found himself pushing himself forward, and I think he did very very well being kind of the box to box, all purpose, all glowing midfielder. You know, doing everything. I think it allowed him to press and do, because he does that well, but he's also great going forward. So I thought that having McAteer in there actually did give him a little bit more, a little bit more freedom. And I thought it looked like a really great team. And, you know, look, 5-0, it's our best win of the season, score wise. And it was an excellent performance, and one where, you know, playing it around has and passing it has worked beautifully. And like I've alluded to, I mean, the fact that like something like the fourth goal was just taken, it was just a lot quicker, you know, a quick ball, none of the passing around, the players, you like use their intelligence to get it to Winks. That was refreshing. And that's what I just want to see that little bit more of. I mean, Enzo Ball's great, but just sometimes just want that speed of thought and just doing things slightly differently occasionally. And I was really, really pleased to see that. And it was a great goal. And then obviously to have it rounded off with a, you know, 4-0 away is great. But, you know, when Vardy gets a second deep into injury time, it just makes everyone sit up and think, oh, you know, Leicester have won again.
Yeah,
you know, Southampton are on this amazing run, and, you know, they've closed the gap a little bit, but currently they are 11 points behind. They've got a game in hand, but they're playing West Brom away pretty soon. They've got some tough games coming up. And irrespective of the fact they've done so great, they are still well behind us. Ipswich are falling away. And I've never really been hugely concerned about Leeds, who again are, you know, way, you know, too far behind us.
Shocked me on Saturday lunch, though, Norm, when Leeds, I should glance at the table, Leeds had popped up into second, didn't they? Because they played the extra game, hadn't they? So,
well, they have, but it's, and to be honest, the apart from, frankly, you know, a potentially record-breaking side, us, you know, it would be an absolutely super, well, and is, you know, the promotion chase is incredible, isn't it? I mean,
let's just for our listeners, Ipswich are in fourth, 29 games, 59 points. Leeds have played a game more, 60 points. Southampton back on 29 games of 61. So as you said, 11 points behind us. And we've played the game more on 30, the same as Leeds, 72. So on comparable games, we're 12 points clear of Leeds, clean, with better goal difference. Southampton and Ipswich both got a game in hand. But yeah, I mean, I was sort of, you know, I was backing Ipswich, but I've got to admit this wobble is becoming a bit untenable. For Kiefer Moore did score a couple for them, didn't he, at the weekend? They signed.
Yeah,
and he's probably quite a good signing to make up for Hurst.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's spot on there. And you know, that they will also go on another decent run and Leeds. And at some point, particularly Southampton, are going to have to, you know, we'll have a little bit of a wobble. You know, they will lose the game. I mean, we have the odd moment when we don't win. I mean, we win most games, but you know, it's, you know, all teams have that in the Championship. It's a really, really tough league. So I think the other thing is, I'm pretty sure Southampton have to go to Ipswich, Leeds, and ourselves. So they're playing all the top teams away from home. So that really could, you know, throw the cat amongst the pigeons. I think it's going to be a fantastic race for second. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we are going to win the league. We really ought to. So the battle for second is going to is very, very interesting. And also the battle for the other couple of playoff places. Because, you know,
once you get away from the top four, there's another slug of teams that are not going to catch the top four, aren't they? But are in there. Some decent sides in there, actually. West Brom, Cov, dare I say, Sunderland, one or two others. But as you say, hopefully we're not part of that. Let's go back and try and tie a few ends. We mentioned the slight disquiet at half time at Swansea, and we were leading that game, and it was quite interesting because we had an email in this week from Banjo. So Banjo, thank you for your email. I'll just briefly read it, and he's had a pop at us here, Norm. It's so Leicester have won again 3-1. That was previous week, but no doubt you'll yet again be whining that yeah we won, but Enzo was right, but etc. etc. I laugh when Killer said you're generally positive about the team. You should listen back to the podcast. Norm, in particular, groaning on, which is you're winning me over, Banjo, with that. You clearly don't like Enzo, so begrudgingly acknowledge a win, lap up a draw, loss with the benefit of hindsight observations. And by the way, not in a million years would I want a washed-up Klopp anywhere near this team. Just for once, can you be positive about being 10 points ahead without sounding constantly like three grumpy old men? That could be difficult, to be fair. Your podcast is getting increasingly hard to listen to. So, you know, okay, got us thinking a bit. And I kind of think, well, I'll tell you what, Norm, as he's called you out in particular, which I do find that a bit harsh, given that you have never predicted Leicester to lose a game. But like, you can have the first right of response. And I've got a couple of thoughts as well. Go on.
No, look, I think he's a bit harsh. What I would say is, you know, I do like Enzo, and I do like some of the football that Enzo plays. I think when we're sat here doing a podcast and we're winning every single week, we can't just sit here and wax lyrical about the best squad ever to have set foot in the Championship, winning all the time, and saying, oh, this is just, you know, it's great. When actually, there are times when passing it around, we get ourselves into trouble and it looks messy and it's slow and it's not exciting to watch. Some of the goals we've scored from it have been outstanding. I get why we do it. my point, Banjo, is I don't mean to be moaning too much about it, but and I do love Enzo. I love our club, and I love where we are in the championship and strolling away with it. But I don't think it's remiss to look at things and think there are things that we could sometimes do better. And I strongly believe that there are times that we could pass it more quickly. There are times when the players should be looking more forward thinking than just thinking, right, we've got to do it this way. We're just going to start passing it back again. In general, it works. I think that there are times when it just doesn't. And they get themselves into little holes and still try and pass it out. And there are times that just, it's like, put your foot through it. Don't give a team an opportunity when we're only 1-0 up. It only takes one mistake, one lucky shot from an opposition to score. So I think there are elements of me being concerned there. You do make some good points, and if I'm groaning, I mean, like Tim says, I like to think I'm fairly positive. But your comments on Klopp, I mean, okay.
Well, hold on. We'll come on to Klopp in a minute for other reasons. Okay. So we'll come back to Klopp.
Okay, fair enough.
It made me think. I think I've been more groany than you two, because I've said consistently I'm not particularly enjoying this year, and this is going to make Banjo completely lose the plot because we are 10 points clear on top of the show. But I'm not, and we said when we started this podcast we'd be honest. We said we weren't going to, there are other podcasts out there, particularly BBC Radio Leicester. They need to maintain relationships. We don't. But I think equally, I don't think Guardiola thinks every single thing Manchester City do is fantastic. They're looking at things. And I think that I do think Maresca's made some mistakes. I mean, a very current example is Patson Daka. If he's going to make him his main striker, which he clearly is, to the point of rushing him back the day after he lands back from AFCON, why make him the one player in the entire squad that you freeze out for 6 months? It completely frozen out of the club. The Cassidy thing, continuing with Cassidy, I think his use of subs is not particularly good at times. And, we are trading it off, as Norm said, against an absolutely the best squad the Championship's ever seen that had £100 million worth of players on the bench for the first game of the season against Coventry. So, I think the expectation is good. Equally, I am fully Banjo conversant and understanding that this season could have gone the other way. And I'm with Norm. I think we're fans of Enzo. I would say, though, for myself, I'm a fan of Enzo for now, because I am nervous because of some of those things that we've talked about next season. And I understand he's going to get the plaudits for getting us up this season. I would point to the fact that the three relegated teams are in the top four teams in the league. So, it's become, if you take two seasons of relegation, pretty much everyone gets straight back up. So I think, there's an expectation that when Enzo Maresca joins Leicester City, he gets us up, and he's doing it. So he's doing it. So absolutely fair dues. Is he getting everything right? I don't think he is getting everything right. And do I have some concerns for next season? Yes, I do have some concerns for next season based on what I'm seeing now. But what I would say, Norm, and I think this is where I give Enzo a bit of credit. You made the point on the James Justin to Jamie Vardy ball. And I think in recent weeks, we have seen a slightly more adapted style of tactics, haven't we? Sort of pass around the back and at all costs. It is there, but we have suddenly seen a willingness, which has largely coincided with Daka coming into the team, of more of a long ball at times. And I do think we're going to need that next year.
Yeah, exactly. And I never want to be critical of it. It's just got to be balanced, haven't you? And look at things as to what might happen. And I think, a good example of this is Vincent Kompany and Burnley walked this division last year, and Luton scrambled up through the playoffs. There's only one team out of those, Sheffield United as well. There's only one out of the three promoted teams that's got a chance of staying up, and it isn't Burnley. That's, Luton don't play this way. Luton, a blood and thunder, a traditional English football team, making the best use of players that they've got. And look how they're doing versus the tippy tappy passing it against really good teams that when they do press, you know, make mistakes. And
you wouldn't want to be doing that now, though, Norm, would you? Playing like Luton now, you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm this is what I'm saying. The concern is more next season. But of course, we've got a summer transfer window. We don't know what, you know, we would need to strengthen. I hate being remotely critical of my club, but like I said, we've got to be balanced. And like you've said, and there have been some mistakes. He has got a superb squad. He has got us playing wonderfully. But there are times when things could be different. And for me, like there are always more than, you know, there's always more than one way to play, even if it's just for a couple of minutes at the beginning and the end of a game.
And it's typical. It's very well timed email, Banjo, actually. So thank you for that. BBC did run a big article on the 31st of January on the website about Maresca. Leicester City boss says Fox's form is being taken for granted by some fans. He's obviously very annoyed. And, you know, he alluded to leaving the club. Now, I don't think in any sense he's necessarily going to carry through on that. But, you know, there is that discord there. And I think you could hear it quite clearly. In fact, it was reported on by Sky at the Swansea game as well, despite us leading. That's where I do peel back and say, come on, guys, we're top of the league by 10 points and we're actually leading in a game. That's pushing it a bit. But it's easy to understand with this style of football, you know, when we've been used to some of the stuff we've had. Interrupted you, Norm, on the Klopp point, because we had another email in from John. So thanks for that. Hi, guys. Klopp in, Winks and KDH out, and 50 million, which cannot be spent immediately, which was the dilemma we gave ourselves last week, which Killer gave us. Yes, all of you. Where did you all go to school, I ask myself? Have you taken leave of your senses? The midfield would be gutted. There's no way we'd go up, and all the recovery work, the newfound unity of spirit would be lost. I trust your next podcast will be broadcast from the sanatorium that now awaits you all. Apart from that, I agree with every word, with a couple of smiley smiley emojis. Cheers for that, John. What's your reaction to that, Norm?
I think that whilst, you know, Enzo has done a wonderful job to turn down arguably probably in the top two best managers in world football, would be a little remiss of us. So particularly when he's, you know, still top of the Premier League, in the League Cup final, still in the FA Cup, still in Europe. I don't think, and I know he's leaving at the end of the season, but I think he's doing pretty well. So I stick to my guns, but everyone's entitled to their own opinions, everyone. So if you're not keen on Klopp, fair play.
I'm sticking to my guns on that as well. I think you build any organisation from the top. And whilst we'd certainly have some lumps to get over without Winks and KDH, I would bank on Jurgen Klopp doing that. But hopefully, Norm can do that for England instead after the Euros. Well, as I said a long, long time ago, let's see if that one comes right. Right, let's move on a bit. The transfer window closed. I just want to talk briefly around issues around that, us and elsewhere, just before we come on and have a look at the Watford match. So this rather nasty rumour about KDH didn't come to fruition for the moment.
No, and I think that's exactly what it was. It's in an exceedingly quiet transfer window, which has obviously been basically led completely by profit and sustainability rules. It's just a way of trying to generate a little bit of a few headlines for the press. I don't honestly think it was really any more than that. I'm sure Brighton might have made an inquiry. Why not? I doubt it got any further than Leicester telling them he's not for sale. And KDH himself came out, didn't he, and pretty well said that he's happy here. He's a Leicester boy. He's going to be in the Premier League next year again. You know, maybe in the summer a decent bit in the summer, maybe there could be some movement, mainly because he's a home classed as this homegrown player. So obviously selling him brings a lot of money that's, you know, profit into the club. But...
Yeah, so I just wanted to make that point for our listeners, because this FFP stuff can be confusing. But as you've touched on it, the pressure on selling KDH rather than another player is an issue that a number of clubs seem to be facing, because there seems to be an issue around Branthwaite, who's a local lad at Everton, who's made the centre-back place his own there. Lewis Miley, even at the richest club in the world in Newcastle, it's the same thing. And the reason is that there's no... original purchase price. So any income from a sale of a local player immediately counts in full towards your FFP bank balance. Whereas if we sell Harry Winks, we buy him for 10 million, let's say him for 20, let's say we sell him for 20, we only bank 10 million towards our FFP bank balance. And, you know, as I've heard various news outlets discussing, Noam, it's absolutely what FFP was not there to create and to enforce.
No, it's not, and it's just all it does is make clubs become creative at what they do, isn't it? It's like Killer alluded to a couple of shows ago, where, you know, if you're buying a player for 50 million over on his contract 5 years, that's the equivalent of spending 10 million every year. So selling KDH for 50 million technically means you could afford, if you had the money there, you could actually afford to buy 5 £50 million players and still only cover, you know, lose that first, you know, 50 million in that first year. So it's I think we're all in agreement that FFP is not really fit for purpose, and the reasons it was brought in, you know, all the reasons we felt it was brought in, it was almost tried to level the playing field more, just as actually worked the other way. And you look at teams like Newcastle, I mean, they've just joined the party at the wrong time, haven't they? So despite all the money they've got, it's just going to take them significantly longer to be able to buy the players they need just because of this. And I think it'd be very interesting to see the outcomes of the Everton and our neighbours case, because if their points deductions are upheld, and certainly like Everton's original one, I think that keeps everyone really quite concerned about it. I think if things like that get overturned and it becomes fines rather than points deductions, people become less worried about it, because like the way to go is, oh, it doesn't really matter. We're not going to lose any points. We're not going to be penalised sporting wise. So it won't become an issue. So I think there's some really, really big decisions coming in the next few months, which will have a massive impact on how clubs try to adhere to FFP and their concerns should they not do so.
But let me ask you a question. This is a bit of a dilemma, really. But I was thinking about this week. So if you take Forest... So, and by the way, it appears this Everton and Forest thing might not be resolved until after the final match of the season this year. But who knows? But I mean, for what it's worth, I think Everton might get a bit of joy appealing their initial points reduction. But, you know, even if it's reduced to 6 points or something.
Yeah.
And I think the suggestion is that Forest would not be 10 points because they'd possibly be more compliant with the authorities in dealing with it. But it just made me think, let's here's a scenario where Forest get a 6 point deduction, right? Valid for this season. Do you not think they might take that to have been able to spend to the levels they have, to have brought in, you know, even by Chelsea standards, unprecedented numbers of players into the City Ground? And to have continued to do that, by the way, in this transfer window, I know we're in a different financial year now, they might well turn around and go, okay, we're going to get a 6 point deduction, but you know, we were a club that came up from the Championship. Without that, we'd have gone straight back down like Burnley and Sheffield United and probably Luton are going to do. Yes, we're getting it with 6 points, but we bought in 150 new players.
Yeah, but if it takes you out of the Premier League, then.
But I'm suggesting it might not. You know, if it's only a 6 point deduction, that you could foresee a way. I mean, I hope it goes the other way. You could foresee a way they easily stay up by 7 points, couldn't you?
Yeah, of course you can formulate an argument for that. But I think given their position, a 6 point deduction would be you know, certainly challenging. Yeah, but of course, if by overspending you are going to stay in the Premier League, and it, despite the points deduction, it, I suppose it's, you know, arguably worth it. But I think if you're only getting a small points deduction or even just a fine, I think that suggests that you're very, you know, you're only just over the limit. I think the, I think the key is how badly over and that you are that would like would influence the kind of points deduction you may or may not have. And what the authorities need to do, there just needs to be something there that, you know, is constant. I mean, it's like VAR. There's nothing constant with VAR. You know, every decision is different. What we don't want is a team that gets, irrespective of whether it's Forest or Everton, you know, if Everton get deducted 10 points, which is more than Portsmouth did when they went into administration, different times, I know, but it's not fair that one club gets deducted 10, another one gets 3, another one gets a fine. There needs to be some consistency here. And if teams are going to get deducted points for financial fair play, then so be it. I mean, you could almost say that for every million you're over or every 5 million, whatever, then it's a point. You know,
it becomes potentially a, you know, a viable strategy. We'll have to move on time. The reason it's front of mind, I'd be interested to see what Killer says next week as well. You know, we couldn't get that Sensi deal done. And by all accounts, the player was there ready to sign. I believe he'd even done his medical. And you know, they only wanted €500,000 up front. And, you know, we were obviously haggling to the point that we walked away from the deal. Now, you know, as we discussed on this show last week, I don't think any of us are going to cry any crocodile tears about that player, because it didn't look to us like a particularly good signing. But what it did do was put in a massive alarm bell up as a player that Enzo clearly wanted, and he came out and said we couldn't afford him. And so, and you know, you just wonder, don't you, that if money's going to be that tight at some point, there's a, you know, would I take a 1 point deduction next year to be allowed to spend 100 million? Yes, I would. Would I take 6 points? Quite probably, yes, I would. Would I take 20 points? No, I wouldn't. And I wonder whether teams are going to start to think in those terms. It's a viable strategy, but
I get it. Yeah, if you knew you were going to get two, you know, start with a 2 point deduction, you know, instead of it being the traditional, we need 40 points, it'd be, well, we need 42.
Yeah, you know, it's, we you need 42, and you've got two £50 million players to help you with that.
Yeah,
no, jobs are good.
Interesting.
Well, right, let's move on. Time's running out. I had a couple of other thoughts around FFP, but we're leaving for another day. Watford, then. Well, we've said before, haven't we? You and I have got very, very bad memories about Vicarage Road. We were there in the Watford end on that horrible, horrible day. So this is another team, a bit like Stoke, that we got a bit of payback for, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair with Watford, I mean, I like paying them back all, the, you know, whenever we can. But we actually got payback the year after, didn't we? With when Chris Wood got hit in the face by the ball being cleared by the goalkeeper, you may remember. You know, probably the most bizarre goal I've ever seen. But yeah, another club that I'd be delighted to get another one over on Saturday. And frankly, expect us to do so. I mean, Watford have spent many years, didn't they, being very much a yo-yo club. You know, changing managers more than, you know, more times than I have hot dinners. And, you know, just constantly being either in the Championship, Premier League, relegation, have a decent season. And then they've just gradually just, you know, the model doesn't work. They've gradually just slipped down to where I suspect they've kind of found what would probably be considered their about the right place for them in the Championship. It's an away game. It's always going to be a challenge. But, you know, the way we're playing, the confidence we're going to have had from the last couple of games, you know, I don't think they've really got too much that we should be massively concerned about. If we play 80% of what we can do, then we should come away with a decent result.
Yeah, I mean, he's Valerian Ismail has been there since the 10th of May, which, you know, is
a record.
Incredibly long term for a Watford manager. Yeah, I mean, they are they've been very up and down this season, haven't they? They've threatened to be a serious playoff challenger, But they're sitting in 11 points, 4 points off the playoffs as it stands. But as we mentioned earlier, there's a big group of teams that are still in there. They're in poor form, actually. It feels to me, with the form they're in, this should be one of those Leicester City go and do a very professional away job dispatching a lesser team.
Yeah, exactly. You've summarised very succinctly what I spent 5 minutes trying to say.
I just copied you, really. But yeah, I suppose two points on the team. Vestergaard did pick up a bit of a knock by the looks of it in the Stoke game. So it'd be just interesting to see whether he makes it. And if he doesn't, who his replacement is, as much as anything. Ben Nelson's getting a bit of game time. Cody, even.
Yeah, I think Nelson would be the choice. I think Nelson's looking good. I think he's on the way to becoming an excellent. I think he'll be a very, very good player. So yeah, I would be very surprised if it wasn't Nelson rather than Cody. I mean, if Vestergaard's got injured, Nelson's come on at half time against Stoke. Why, if he wasn't, you know, why has he chosen Nelson over Cody? There's a reason. And it's because he prefers Nelson. So I expect that now he's had a bit of game time, he's a young lad, I think he'll be more than happy to throw him in at Watford. I think prior to the last couple of games, he might have been a bit more nervous, you know, maybe wanting him to get a bit more game time. And obviously Cody's got so much experience. But yeah, I'd be quite satisfied with Nelson popping in for Vestergaard.
And the other one, and you know, hence why I think we're reasonably chuffed this Sensi deal didn't happen. You would guess he would go with a chastened Casey McAteer, yellow carded and then quickly hooked after, which was rather silly, wasn't it? Because I think it's entirely down to the yellow card that he was hooked, having scored a goal and looking good in that position. You'd hope he'd get another chance there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, booking another half to go, winning 2-0. It's like, there's no point risk getting another booking, and we've got players that can come in and do a job, which they did do. So I think that was the right decision. But I would expect, I'd actually expect, you know, assuming Vestergaard doesn't make it, pretty much the same side. I suppose we've discussed right at the beginning of the show, Doyle, JJ, you know, it could be either of those, but I wouldn't expect it to be anything other than I think it'll be the Stoke team. Maybe with the Nelson and JJ and instead of Vestergaard and Doyle, but I doubt there'll be any other change.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. If you want to get in touch with us, folks, it's leicestercitypubcast@gmail.com. We'll keep your email confidential. Do get in touch like various guys have today. Norm, predict a challenge with Trumpwell's IPA. Killer got the Swansea match bang on 3-1. So we've had Swansea and Stoke. We all predicted wins for both, but Killer got that one right. And I think for the first time ever, Leeds, the predictor, with 33 points, 32 for me and you. So well done, Killer, in your absence. You can celebrate that and hope you get over your illness with that one. Norm, Killer has gone for Leicester City 3, Watford 1.
That's an excellent prediction. I'm going to go for the same score difference, but I'm going to go for 2-0 to Leicester. I think we're going to get another clean sheet.
Yeah, I'm going 2-0 as well, actually. So I think we're all reasonably confident. Final thoughts, Norm?
Final thoughts. Enzo Maresca, I do really like you. It's always going to be Klopp, though, everyone. Always.
That's it, folks. We're all off to get our normal seats in the Watford end, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed the Leicester City Pubcast, please subscribe and tell everyone about it. If you hated the Leicester City Pubcast, please keep it to yourselves. See you next week.